Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Mac. We're all iPhone plus 1 week. I'm not hating it.
Which one do you have now? Did you get the 6 or 6? You got a 6 plus, right?
I got a 6 plus, 128, top of the shop.
I'm back and forth every day. I don't know. Yesterday was a good 6 plus day. I was happy with it yesterday.
All right. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple, you've heard the dulcet tones there straight away. Top left, it's Adam. How's it going, mate?
Good. So it's warming up in here.
You are in the back in the closet. After all those years of coming out of college, you decided, stuff it, I'm back in.
I'm in the closet studio. Maccast Studio is 1.5, and hopefully it's 0.5 because I'm not going to be here super long. But it works. And, you know, I threw up some packing blankets to dampen the sound. I've got them surrounded by them, as you can see.
Yeah,
threw up the clock for everybody who loves that thing.
For the people with OCD.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, we got it. It's just ticking in the corner there. Superb.
Yeah, the clock that tells the wrong time and the pendulum that's fake.
Yeah. So. Good man. Well, we're glad to have you back. Have you shifted the other house yet?
Does that mean sold?
Yeah.
No, it's hitting the market hopefully this week. We got it all prettied up and ready to go. So we'll see how that goes.
Good man. Good man. Next to him, John Montalara. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. I am great. It's nice to be here.
Welcome to the British Tech Network, mate. Good to have you on.
This is my first time. I'm excited.
You won't be at the end.
And like many before you, you probably will never be back.
Not because
you wouldn't be invited.
This is the network where careers come to die. Relax and enjoy, mate. Next to him, it's Kyle Swagger, our ace news show presenter.
Hello.
Dude, I've got to publicly say now, thank you so much for picking up the news show again. I mean, that's been absent for nearly 2 years, and I did that every day for 3.5 years. It's 3 hours a day, guaranteed. It's never anything less than that. And I firsthand know how much effort you're putting into delivering the new show for us every day.
Yeah.
And I know you're only 3 days in.
Yeah, I know. I know I'm only 3 days in, and I'm already thinking, what the hell have I got myself into?
Don't scare him off. What are you doing?
Oh, no, he did it because he used to help me out. If I was stuck one day, he'd go, no, I'll do it. So he's done it before. So, mate, I'm over the moon that show's back, and we've had a massive, massive response. There's so many people sent messages and tweets, and we've had a couple of reviews go up in iTunes already saying, brilliant that the Daily Show's back. Thank you very much. So the new show. Yeah,
I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm happy. Everybody's happy. And I have a lot of fun doing it. So hopefully we're 3 days in. So hopefully 3 months in, I'll still feel the same. Hopefully.
And Ellis has decided to come home from school. So I've got to go and let him in. last bit by now. Won't be a sec. I can edit. Don't worry.
He never edits. We all know this.
He'll just leave this. In fact, if we all sit here and talk, he'll actually leave it.
You see, you can't all swear now and then try and catch me out on the edit because I've got remote wireless system so I can hear what you're saying when I'm gone. And the wife was here, apparently. I didn't even know.
No.
So there you go. That'll be easy to edit. Yes, no, mate. Great that you got it back. Fantastic response from everyone. Thank you. Get yourself over to BritishTechNetwork.com and subscribe to the new show. 5 minutes for all the tech news stories of the previous day. Now, one of our stories, the Bash thing must have not quite made it, I would have thought, today.
No, I didn't make it. No, not today.
Because you post about 5, 6 o'clock in the morning UK time?
I think this morning was a little earlier. I think it was about 4 a.m. because I had to get to the office today a little earlier. But, it's about that time, 4 or 5 o'clock. No later than 7 o'clock UK time, for sure.
You live in the perfect time zone for the breakfast show here, mate. Absolutely beautiful. And last but by no means least, Michael Johnston.
Hey, how's it going?
We have passed several times, have we not? One's your fault, one's my fault. So now you're actually here again. So well done, mate. Good to have you back.
As I woke up this morning, there was, it was cancelled or moved.
All right. Rub it in. Yeah, go on, rub it in.
Here I am.
Yeah, you're here. Good man. Excellent. Before we discuss the week in Apple, we've got a couple of reviews and we've had an email. The email is from Michael, and it says, "Dear Ewan, last week on the show, you said, 'Sorry about the audio, but it's really friggin' hard,' unquote. What do you mean by really friggin' hard? It's just audio." Well, the problem I've got is that everyone dials in at the last minute before the show, and I can't tell what volume they're going to come in with, and I can't hear what goes out and gets recorded. I can only hear what comes out of the desk, and that's not representative of what Logic and the PreSonus firework card want to do to it. And sometimes I can correct it in post, and sometimes I can't. So that's the long and the short of it. So I'm awfully sorry if it has come out a little bit different at times, but it's hard. It really is hard when everyone dials in at the last minute. There's no time for great big sound checks or anything like that. So and record a piece of audio and say, "You needs to go up, and who needs to go down." That's the answer to that. Other reviews following on from that. Rob has left one. I've not bothered writing podcast reviews in the past, but the British Tech Network deserves a damn good pat on the back. Very late to the whole podcasting thing. Started with Twit Network. Couldn't miss a thing. Watched live and about half a dozen shows a week. Discovered you and the British Tech Network and love it. Real people with real use for the stuff that they discuss. Not found a single guest on the show that makes me want to turn off or not listen, which is not how I feel about most podcasts. I think a lot of my enthusiasm is, as many have said, that it's a really UK-based slant and they aren't frightened to take the mickey out of themselves. It's a must listen. Thank you very much, mate. 5 stars. And following on from Trevor Zedder last week, the Count of Cristo has left us a review. I have been listening to the show for around 6 months. I think it's a fantastic show, and like anything erudite, not everybody will understand it. It's fun, informative, and doesn't take itself too seriously. Something we could all learn from. Thanks, Ewan, for the hard work in giving me something else to look forward to each and every week. In fact, due to a review last week that was less than complimentary and a tad personal, I've decided to set up a direct payment to you guys through Patreon and increased it from $5 to $10 per month. Oh,
bravo.
Thank you so much. If you want to sponsor us, then go to patreon.com/British Tech Network and like the Count himself, you can give us $5 or $10. I'd love to see this show more than once a week. You're dreaming. it's taken me months to understand this show. It has an understated elegance about it. Anyway, thanks, you, and best of luck. And I'm, as a small businessman at present, I promise you that as I grow, so will my pledge to you. Thanks, guys. That's a lovely review. Thank you so much. If you'd like to leave us a review in iTunes, we read them all out, good or bad, so it doesn't matter if you put 5 star or 1 star. It doesn't matter if it's a personal comment, although I do say if it's a personal comment, I will find out where you live and I will stick a cricket bat up your ass. So do watch out. The week in Apple. It's been a fun Apple. Let's start with some positive stuff before we do bash, and that gives everyone a chance to kind of research it, because to be fair, it all came out during the middle of the night for America.
Yeah.
As you all know, I sat last week and waited for my iPhone 6 to come. It didn't come until 6 p.m. in the end, and then I couldn't activate it, so I ended up with a Swift shop at the 3 shop. And I managed to get a SIM, and I activated it first thing on Saturday morning. I love it. I do love it. in terms of sizing, there was my, I'm holding it up to the camera. There was my Lumia 1020 next to it. And it's probably about half an inch taller, but actually it's not any wider, a fraction wider, but not an awful lot than the Lumia. I really enjoy it. I had a bit of a mishap with the touchscreen. And we were sort of, before we started, I've got a couple of recognition issues with it, whereby I'm dabbing on something and it's typing the wrong character on the keyboard. And also when I set it up, I put in a passcode, and the passcode that I then put in to get back in said, no, wrong passcode. And I couldn't get any variants of it, and then it locked me out, and I had to do a remote reset from Find My iPhone on the iPad.
Has it been okay since then?
Well, the correct code is there now, because I've checked that, so I can type in the code and get away with it. But just when I'm typing tweets or emails, I end up with a B more than space an awful lot. And at first I thought that was just kind of like a muscle memory thing, because it's a bigger screen, you know, I'm not getting to the bottom, I'm not actually making the full distance back to dab. But, you know, I've tried to check myself and be a little bit more deliberate about it, and I've still had a few Bs pop up, so... I don't know if I've
got a recognition. I hope it's not a display issue. I hope it's not, you know, a hardware defect for you.
Me as well, but because that means
it sounds like it is to me.
I'll get some buggers returned one then, won't I?
I mean, if you've already had to, you know, do a restore, I'd think about taking it back to an Apple store and getting it replaced right away.
Yeah, the problem is that might not be possible.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, because
go ahead.
Oh, you mean because they are in so much demand?
Yes.
Well, to be fair,
yeah, but Apple stores tend to keep a few aside for failures like that. So
yeah, the ones
they do allocate that.
Ones that people have brought back.
All the ones that are being returned, yeah. Which is a weird thing. I'm getting so many tweets from people who are taking them back, and I've thought about it myself because, you know, some days to me it's a little bit too large, but I think you need to give it more than, you know, a few days. Some people are returning them after having it for 1 or 2 days, and I think that's not long enough, because I've been flip-flopping, you know, with some days I feel like it's too large. And just like yesterday, I was using it and going, this is kind of nice. And as a matter of fact, I picked up my 5S because I was kind of preparing it to hand down to my wife. And that thing started feeling tiny and I started typing on it. And I'm like, oh, now this is starting to feel awkward. So I think there's a transitionary period that you're going to have to kind of go through. And
I was lucky, Adam. I had that Amazon Fire Phone for review for 3 weeks.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And I had it next to my 5S, and I just knew right away that 4.7-inch screen was perfect for me. So when I ordered the 6, I knew exactly what I was going to be getting. Yeah, that helped a lot.
Yeah, no, that the Fire Phone looks nice. Is it? Does it perform very well, John, or were you disappointed in it? Did you expect?
No, I wasn't disappointed at all. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised. Android KitKat can be a very geeky, pleasant, very subtle, beautiful operating system. The Amazon overlay, the Fire OS, gives you some, you know, nice touches. Fire themes. It's a beautiful, well-constructed phone. It was nice to hold and handle, and had a lot of nice features, and I was impressed with it. But I think it got a lot of bad press out of the box because of that Firefly feature where it would scan around and look at things and try to figure out what you need. And boy, people just flew off the handle and got all uptight about that snoop factor of Firefly, and it gave the phone kind of a bad reputation. But handling the phone and using the phone and browsing and reading email and using the apps and watching Netflix, it's a really nice phone.
Isn't it a custom build of the operating system?
Yeah, it's not pure.
I think they're using Android 4.2.2, if I remember right, and then there's a Fire OS on top of that kind of customizes it and locks down some things. For example, you can't use Google Maps on it because Google's persona non grata at Amazon, and so you have to use their Maps app. So there's some gotchas about it that keep it from being open. And the Firefly has to be handled properly. You know, you have to, it's always on and it's always listening. So you have to know how to do a double tap. And just like on the iPhone, you have to kill the Firefly app to make sure it's not running in the background.
Mm.
So there's some gotchas with that phone. And I think people are a little edgy about it in that respect. But I did a review of it, and in the broadest sense, it's a nice phone. I enjoyed using it, and I was trying to keep it. They wouldn't let me have it. They said, no, you got to send it back. I was sad.
Bastards.
To me, the biggest.
Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, the biggest thing, the biggest gotcha about the Amazon Fire phone was it was $200 and now it's 99 cents. That's the biggest
nothing
gotcha.
Like devaluing your product, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That was a bad move.
That's got to be on contract though, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the $200 was on contract. I mean, it's almost kind of reminds me of what Apple did in 2007 when it was $700. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to go down to whatever it was then. It was it $399?
Yeah, $400.
Or for the 8 gig, I think it was at the time. And, boy, that pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah, no. It's, the 99 cents SIM free would be really cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think everybody'd have one.
$200 on contract or 99 cents SIM free. No, I got to say, this thing is a thing of beauty. It's very thin. Looks like it could bend easily. Yeah. But
oh, really?
Really? But you say. But no, I really like it. The only thing I would say is this doesn't, I mean, I dropped it three times on the sofa on Friday night. It's like, I'm not one for, I haven't got sweaty hands, you know, that I'm quite dry in the hand. And I found it slipped out the hand very easily. So I went and bought a red leather cover in it. You saw that too, Mike, yeah?
Yeah, well, I had 24 hours swapped it for nonplussed, as I call it. I figured as soon as I got it home, only a couple hours before I decided that it was far too big, but I decided that I would take advantage of the big screen and watch an episode of 30 Rock in bed, and I think I dropped it three or four times through one episode of 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Just because it's so weighty, and holding it in one hand, it doesn't like to be used hand at all.
No. There's two things that I'm wondering though, and part of the reason why I haven't returned mine yet. One thing is just waiting on developers. I'm worried about there's going to be some return regret from some people, because UIs haven't been fully optimized. And I think that's going to be kind of a big deal when developers start to optimize their apps for the larger screen. But on your thing, Michael, you know, the one hand versus two handed thing, the other thing that I'm curious about, and I'd like to know from those of you who have the six, because I've heard different opinions from different people, is the six really all that one handable? Because can you reach, you know, like the upper left hand corner without using the whole reachability thing?
Well, there's this little shift I do with my hand where I kind of slide the phone by handling it properly. I haven't had any problem with it at all in that regard.
It's not less comfortable than sort of doing it on a, say, for example, a 5S.
I've got big hands, so I haven't noticed any problem at all.
So
I'll get on my soapbox. I've been frustrated by this. I haven't had an opportunity to get on my soapbox. We haven't done an episode of iOS show yet, but so I've been thinking a lot about it. I do still have my 5 round. I'm definitely a one-handed iPhone. Figured that out. Wasn't entirely sure. I thought going into it that I would want the Plus and I would be able to handle it just fine and it was great for me. But as it turns out, too big for me, and I kind of think that the 6 is too big as well. I definitely at this point would have purchased 6 if it came in the size of it. Now I can, for the most part, everything from the bottom right to the top left, and but depending on how I'm holding the phone when I go into trying to jump up to the top extreme of the screen, it may or may not be comfortable, and I have been using reachability for sure. And I noticed that on my 5, I tend to hold it in two distinct ways. So there's the, when I'm talking at least handed, there's the slightly lower grip where I'm doing more concerted typing.
Yeah, like thumb typing.
And when I'm kind of holding it generally and typing around, or moving around within the interface, I have a slightly higher grip, but I still have to have it held in a way that you can still get to the home button, but it's slightly less comfortable to do a lot of typing on it in that fashion. And I seem to have a similar pattern with this, where I have two different positions where I hold it, but it's definitely less comfortable, especially when I'm playing with it in the bed, kind of held over my head.
Say that again.
That audio is going to edit beautifully, mate, for the Christmas show.
So, but ultimately, like I said, my final statement, the size of the 6, I wish it was the size of the 5, but
yeah. I think there's a lot of people that are saying that, which is, that's why, like, yesterday, after using the 6 Plus for a while, I can, you know, if I have to, I can actually use it one-handed using the reachability thing. And to be honest, the reachability thing, it works, but it's such a hack around. It really is. You know, it's really Apple sort of admitting this is really these are two-handed devices for the most part. But it will give you this thing if you need to actually use it one-handed. And with the Plus, for me, my thumb, I can, you know, even with the lower grip, I can barely reach the little number, you know, punctuation key on the keypad with one hand. It's really a stretch, and it's not very comfortable. But when I started seeing people saying the same thing you're saying, Michael, it's like, well, I went to the 6, but even there, I can't sort of one hand everything. It's better, but it's, you know, it's not like my 5 or my 5S was. And I kind of wish that Apple had kept that size around.
I think it's a big take on Apple. I really do. That they haven't. I mean, if you look at the fact that they're selling the 5S, 32 gig size, it kind of seems like they're hedging their bets.
Right? No.
We'll definitely see them next year. I would love it to come out sooner, but I think next year we're going to see a 6 form factor in the size of the 5S.
Yeah, I think you're wrong, but
plenty of people who keep
hoping.
They don't want a phone in the size of the 5, and they want to keep it in the original 3.5-inch screen. And at this point, with the size of the 6, definitely.
Those days are over, Michael. I mean, you know, we hark back to the days when Steve Jobs wanted to pull a 3.5-inch phone out of his shirt pocket, and everybody got all uptight about, you know, you have to fit it in a normal dress shirt pocket. But we've come so far. The phones have gotten so much powerful. The iPhone 6 is 84 times faster than the original iPhone. We're doing Google Maps. We're watching movies on Netflix. I mean, the whole texture, power of the operating system has changed so much that we just have to have these bigger screens. And what I'm interested in is not so much holding it with one hand, which is not really a big problem for me, but what I'm interested in is how you carry these bigger phones around. When you had a little tiny 4S, you know, you could put it just about anywhere and tuck it away. But when you put a iPhone 6, even not even a Plus, when you put it in a case, I was reviewing the OtterBox Defender yesterday, and that OtterBox Defender is a lot of plastic, and it makes the phone 9 ounces in weight now and 6 inches long. And when you hang this thing on your belt with the belt clip, it's like having an aircraft carrier on your waist, you know? So I'm going to write about this today at the Mac Observer, is how do we carry these phones? I've made jokes about having a leather shoulder holster. You know, one side you've got your Walther PPK and the other side you've got your iPhone 6 Plus. You can't put it on a lanyard and wear it around your neck like a necklace because it's too heavy. If you put it in your back pocket and sit on it, it's going to bend. Carrying this thing around when you're not using it is getting to be kind of an issue because of the size and weight. And I don't see Apple dealing with that.
So I think, this is lighter, isn't it? This phone is lighter than the 5.
No, it's not.
Okay. It's fractionally heavier then.
It's 4.55 ounces or something like that. The 6.
I mean,
it's a few grams heavier.
If you're a skinny git and you've got small pockets, then I can see that this thing would stick out the top. But if you're a fat bastard like me, then it falls to the bottom of your pocket and I never see it again. I think there's two issues that they've got though, Michael, with your point. I don't think they've hit a home. They haven't got a curveball, if you like, with the 5S, but it'll still be around. They can't fit what's in here into the 5S. That's the trouble, into that frame. And so they're just continually repurchasing stock and making 5S's in the old specification because they're not going to redesign it in any way. There's going to be nothing new coming out of that. It's just the phone that's going to be sold. It's the bargain basement phone of the range now. So that's where they're coming from. They've gone up in size to fit some of the extra technology in, and also lots of people were screaming for bigger cases. Is the 6 too big? Well, here's my trick. So you've all got the little finger thing on the bottom, right? Yeah. Right, okay. So when I send a tweet, I'll sit and type the tweet in, And then when it's ready to send, so new tweet. When it's ready to send, I turn it on its side, and then my thumb reaches over and can't. Yeah, I turn it on its side, and the tweet button goes into the bottom right corner, so I can send it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just tilt it back, and then reach over with my thumb, and then put it back to vertical again. But the other thing as well that really annoys me is the kind of, you know, the changing your screen orientation and the thing swinging round. That works mm-hmm. just fine as long as you're on standard view. If you go on zoom view, it doesn't do it. Which I think
no, because stupid. It's supposed to work like the old interface in yeah. zoomed view.
In old man mode.
Yeah.
Michael, I can still kick you, you know, dude. camera, what do we think to the camera? Is it the same as the 5S or is it an upgrade from the 5S? I never had a 5S, so I can't.
I haven't played with it too much, unfortunately.
I'll let you know in December.
I know a little bit about it. I know that it's got a better sensor. It's got something called focus pixels that is an advanced technology from the digital SLRs merged into the phone that helps give a sharper focus. I think the sensor is improved.
I think what we want to know, though, John, is does the marketing hype translate into better photos for people?
Well, Jeff Gamet thinks so.
Well, I've done a test.
He's impressed with the photos he took with his new 6 compared to the 5S. He said it was a noticeable visual difference.
I think you've got to be careful of saying it's a great camera when actually it's a camera that does pretty well, but it's not a great camera because, you know, a DSLR is a great camera. Or, you know, sure. a medium format camera is a great camera for a phone. That's it. You've got to put it in the context of it's a phone.
Sure.
And I think the other thing as well that we get, which is where the camera's going to go and what it's going to do for you. So if you're talking about you want an Instagram picture, then you could go back 2 years and the camera would be just fine. Mm-hmm. So that's not, you know, say, oh, well, I only want it for Instagram. That's not a test of how good the camera is. It's about saying, well, what can I do with this? How far can I go? If I take a picture on this phone, what are my output options with it? So I can send it down social media and everyone's happy, ticking the box. Next stage up, I can print it off at 6x4. Yes, ticking the box. 7x5, ticking the box. 8x10, ... ticking the box. Now I want to send it out at A3 or I want to send it out at 16x30 or something like that. Then you go, no, well, actually, it can't cope with that. Then that when you start running out of output options, that's the quality test of how good a camera is. And one of the things that Andy and Atco kind of said I was wrong on last week is the 100% test. But the 100% test isn't what Andy was saying. It's not a test of what you can see in the image and the sharpness and the quality, because sharpness ruins larger images. Sharpness is the enemy that you have when you want to boost up size, because that sharpness will give you very hard defined edges, but those then get blocky once you start to grow the image. So what you're looking for in the 100% test is, can I take this image somewhere else? I've taken a few test shots. Have you guys all got the feed up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll stick these on and you can kind of say what you think as we go along with it. So the first one is just a basic color test. I took a picture of my daughter's pink pajamas. iPhone 6 on the left, Lumia 1020 on the right. Now, a lot of people have looked at that and gone, oh, wow, the colours on the Lumia are amazing. But the problem is with the Lumia, it does oversaturate and it does overexpose as well. I was far more impressed with the iPhone 6 image on the left, because what I can do with it, I can add saturation all I want. I can't take away that saturation on the Lumia, because actually you've got to the stage where the Lumia is so oversaturated that it's burnt out the definition in the pyjamas. So I've got solid pinks in there. I can't do anything
right.
with that. I can't go anywhere with that afterwards. And if I start to say, right, well, I really want a picture of my daughter's pink pajamas up on the wall, the iPhone image would give me more opportunity to create a larger image to output. That said...
How was the green? I noticed you've got a bright green back there, too. Were you able to capture that with the Lumia versus the iPhone 6?
Yeah, I did. I did a bush with the green.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to get a fern there for a second, then it's going to go back to the... Is that corrupted? Is the feed all right?
I don't know. We're delayed by, you know, a minute.
Yeah, by 4 days and 9 hours.
So you should have a picture of a bush.
There we go. Yep.
Yeah. Just a green bush.
So is it closer to reality with the iPhone 6 than with the Lumia? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's better saturations definitely in the 6 than there is in the Lumia. The Lumia is definitely oversaturating. I mean, one of the first shots I did was to point it straight into the sun and take a picture of something that was with the sun right at its back. So that first picture there that I'm putting there is the iPhone. And it's the sun is directly behind there, just high and to the right out of shot. And that did very well. I was very impressed with that in HDR.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm noticing something in the image that got stuck up there that looks like it's the bush with what I'm assuming was your low light test behind it. It looked like the low light was performing better on the iPhone 6 Plus. No.
Well, yeah, let me come to that. But then the Windows Phone 8 one did well. Now, but the difference is with these, on all of the shots I'm showing you, the Windows Phone, I'm only using the JPEG output, and the JPEG output is not the best thing about the Lumia 1020 because it's the DNG output. So if you compare the sizes of the two, excuse me, those are the relative size outputs of the 1020 and the iPhone 6 Plus. So they're two completely different or ratios for a start. One's 4:3 and one's 10:3:2. So you get a longer elongated image with the Lumia. But if you then look at the DNG output from the Lumia and compare that to the iPhone, that's the one that really kind of blows your socks off because the, and I've lost the sodding image. Oh, that was going to be so slick then.
And DNG is not at all an option with the iPhone, or is there third-party apps you can get to do
no,
that?
No, DNG is not an option.
Even with a third-party app?
As far as I'm aware, no, because it can't collect directly from the sensor. I'll gladly stand corrected on that.
I think that's part of iOS 8, quite possibly. I know there are better hooks into autofocus and exposure.
I think those are just for filters and things like that. Yeah, I just don't know if the OS can actually pull image right from the sensor.
So there's the comparison side. That's the Lumia JPEG to the iPhone Plus image. And this is the relative sizes of the iPhone 6 Plus image to the Lumia DNG. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Lumia DNG is massive, and also because it's a DNG, you've got, you know, almost infinite capability of editing.
Sure, post is really opened up. Edits.
Yeah, so in terms of which is the better camera, if you're talking about the JPEG output, it's the iPhone hands down. If you're talking about where can I go with this later, what can I do with this later, what outputs will it allow me to achieve, the Lumia gives an awful lot of great options. There's other issues as well. You mentioned the low light, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two low light images. That's in my toilet with the door closed. you've got iPhone 6 on the left and Lumia 1020 on the right. And you're going, well, actually, you know, the colors look lighter and brighter on the 6. And the Lumia 1020 looks a bit yellow and a bit kind of washed out for color as well. But when you go to the 100% test, and this is the point I was trying to make last week, there's a massive difference, and this is the issue of why you do a 100% test. It's where can I go with this image? And you can see on the iPhone 6 image on the left, that's already very chunky and choppy before I've even started to try and blow it up, where although I've got problems with the yellows and although I've got underexposure, the Lumia 1020 has far much more, not sharpness, because that's my enemy in exposure. It's my ability to create sharpness within it.
Right. Yeah, this is what I saw this image with the lace on on your Twitter, I think.
Yeah, so that, for me, and that's the JPEG comparison as well. That's not the DNG comparison.
So that's the Lumia JPEG on the right.
All of these are Lumia JPEGs. I haven't put any DNGs in.
Yeah, I mean, that'll make a difference if you had DNG with that.
Macro. Whoever described the iPhone as having macro, I want what they're smoking, because I couldn't get it to get any closer than that. That's the closest image I could get, and that's the closest image with the Lumia 1020. 1020 doesn't have macro. It's not good at all.
Does Apple advertise that they have macro?
Well, in the keynote, they said, and if you like your macro photography, you're going to love the iPhone 6. I couldn't get it to macro at all, unless I'm missing a setting somewhere, but I couldn't find it. And manual focus, because allegedly we got manual focus coming, but I think manual focus is a developer option rather than it being an inherent feature within the camera.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah.
Although, isn't there an option to tweak the exposure pretty easily within the camera app?
Well, that's not the focus, though.
You tap where you want to do your autofocus, and you get a brightness slider that you slide up and down, and you can adjust focus before you take your shot. Yeah. But the problem there is if you refocus, you've got to readjust your... It's not ideal, I don't think, because you refocus, you got to readjust your exposure, because every time you tap focus, it's still sampling for auto exposure.
So... iPhone 6 Plus on the left here, I couldn't get it to do anything other than focus on the net curtains, whereas the Lumia 1020 actually has a physical manual slider that you call up and you move it up and down until you get the focus that you want.
Yeah. Again, some of these things I think are probably taken care of by third-party apps and not the built-in camera app.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely one thing that third-party developers will be able to access is the exposure and the focus controls, so...
I think providing that will allow it to do it, I think that could be really, really good. But it's just whether it's to what degree it allows it to control it. That's going to be my caveat.
So I think the big question is, will the iPhone 6 or the 6 Plus, will it allow you to capture that big moment that, you're the best camera is the one that you have with you, as so many have said before. And there have been many times where I was experiencing something that I really wanted to capture either in video or in photo. And it didn't turn out exactly as I wanted it to in that moment. Gone. Do you think that at this point, the 6 and or 6 Plus provide a really good option for people doing something like that?
I always hate that statement, because you can choose whichever camera you want to take with you or not take one at all. It's the most smileless thing I've ever heard. But the thing I will say is that the kind of like, okay, I'd like to take a picture, let's switch it on and now I'm ready to shoot. That's the iPhone 6. I would be 30 seconds before this is ready to shoot. This is not a capture the moment camera. The Lumia 1020 is crap at startup. And I've always complained about that. I've always said it's crap at startup. It takes significantly superior images. But this thing's ready to shoot in a split second. And I love it for that. Love it for that. Absolutely. I'm sorry, I got a tickle in my voice. Now, the other one that I wanted to point out just before we finish is zoom. So that's maximum zoom of the iPhone on the left, and then I've matched the 1020, because the 1020 limits your zoom capability, and then it oversamples. But the thing is, because of the way that it takes the image, it means you can then almost infinitely zoom thereafter. So the iPhone doesn't limit your zoom. You can just keep zooming until you get to the end of the stop on it. And it looks like a watercolor. It's bloody awful. It is the worst zoom I've ever seen on a camera for digital
Which
zoom.
Which one?
Sorry?
It's just a crop.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas the Lumia...
Which is the worst?
The iPhone 6.
Yeah.
I mean...
Never been happy with their digital
zoom.
You
can just see straight away, seeing the image of the house that I've got here. Once you start to zoom, it gets really nasty really quickly. And it looks like it's a watercolor, like a processed watercolor afterwards. Whereas the Lumia, and you can keep zooming on the Lumia, because although it limits your zoom for the original image, you can then zoom in on that image because the pixels have been oversampled. On the DNG, you can go in. On the JPEG, you can't, but on the DNG, you can go in very, very deep with it. If you want to take a camera to go out for the day and capture family stuff that you're going to want to put in up to an 8x10 on the wall, sorry, Lumia, but it's the iPhone 6. And if you want a pro image that you can blow up to fill a wall afterwards, it's the Lumia 1020.
I did a little searching around and Googling while we were talking, just to figure out what's going on with the iPhone camera and iOS 8. And as near as I can tell, I think you still can't get a DNG image. Again, I could be wrong on this. But as far as the manual controls, there's some apps out there, one called ProCam 2, that gives you... a bunch of DSLR stuff, including like spot focusing, spot metering, exposure comp, manual exposure, speed control, white balance.
You will get in app control, but you won't get liners. You won't get DNG output.
No, you can save to, they say, JPEGs and lossless tips, but I don't see DNG.
You're not going to get a DNG output, no. Nothing.
Yep.
That's got to come from the sensor itself, which iPhone. Yeah.
But you do have all those manual controls, so you can do, you know, everything with sliders, white balance, focus, all that sort of stuff. Pro Camera 2? Pro Cam 2? Yeah,
I messed with one of those when they first came out, and it was talking shit, effectively. So it didn't do any of that stuff properly.
Under iOS 8, though?
No. I'm saying...
Yeah, iOS 8 changes everything, because... Yeah, prior it was all hacky stuff that they were doing because Apple did not give access to that level of camera. And like Michael said, with iOS 8, they changed that. So now they can access focus and exposure controls and things like that directly through the camera APIs. So
the thing is, there's a lot of charts out there at the moment saying that this is a better camera, that's a better camera. Better camera is contextual. And it's
I think you nailed it. I think your explanation was great. You know, so it comes down to, you know, what kind of shooting you do and what's the best camera your smartphone camera to have in your pocket for you.
Yeah, right. The test of the camera for you is output. What are you going to do with that image? Where can you take that image? How much can you implement that image afterwards with 30 seconds in Photoshop or auto-tuning it in iPhoto or something like that? And if it's nasty to start with, it's nasty at the end of it. And there's some shots that are coming out of the iPhone 6 that I think are really nasty. I would never, ever put them in front of anyone else.
We haven't even gotten into video yet.
Video, I want to have its children. Holy shit, video. I shot some stuff. I put a coffee making thing up yesterday that I made with the 240. And what's beautiful as well about the 240 FPS image is that it sends out a file which is 240 FPS, and it's the full thing is FPS. It hasn't got that kind of quick, slow, quick feature that it's got in the in-app stuff. So when you get it, you can stick it into Final Cut. And one of the things that I did for a firm a little while ago was they had some old movie footage that was like, you know, when you put it in and it's been the frame's been overcranked, so undercranked, so the stuff all looks sped up. I put it into Final Cut and I moved it out to 85% because that was the last point at which I could make sure that there was no frame jerking in it, so it looked smooth even though it was slower. So I applied the same rules to that with 240 and I managed to crank it up to 320 frames a second in Final Cut. So if you take your raw image and put it into Final Cut and then take it down to 8% on the retime function, which is Command and R, you can get it down to 8%, and that'll give you 320 frames effect, 20 frames a second effectively, and it's smooth. So my coffee commercial that I made yesterday just for a bit of fun, that was made at some of
that. Is that up somewhere? 320.
It's in YouTube. If you go to British Tech Live at Gmail.
Check that out later.
On YouTube. I'll put a link in the chat room in a minute. What's your, I mean, so anything else that anyone wants to add about the iPhone? I'm sorry, Kyle, because you're not getting in the Philippines for another 6
until
weeks.
December, I think. Late November, early December, yeah.
The good thing is Greeny's not getting it for another 6 weeks either, though.
I guess my question is, has anybody done a comparative test between the 6 and the 6 Plus, because really the big difference is the optical versus digital video stabilization. Is it about as good? Is it not as noticeable of a difference between the two?
Well, I've got image stabilization on the 1020, and the iPhone 6 is as good as. And I was always impressed with the 1020 stabilization. And for taking low light shots, it's superb.
Cool.
Absolutely superb. So
you guys are pushing me back to keeping the Plus. I also kind of learned from my parents that you make your decisions and you stick with them, right?
You just kind of have to have both.
I think the 6 Plus is the decision. I mean, you know, handling it, you'll get used to that. That's just a muscle memory type thing, you know. It's not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go back to the 6 now because I bought it for video. So plain and simple. I didn't buy it for video and camera.
You make your choices in life and you live with them.
What case are you thinking about putting on that 6+, Adam?
I've been thinking about taking it back a couple times. Yeah. I mean, specifically when things like happen, you know, getting it in and out of my pocket is not easy. And I've even caught it, you know, on the edge and had some like, oh crap moments where it's like, this thing's going to flip out and fall. But it's just, you know, then I think, you know, really that's dumb. It's just learning to be more careful, you know, not to be as, you know, sort of be more aware of when you're doing things. Right. And that solves that problem. So it's a behavioral correction, not necessarily sort of like Ewan's talking about, right? It's getting used to the form factor. It's relearning muscle memory things like, you know, and even this would be a problem on the 6 too. That's moving the sleep wake button to the side has been kind of a pain the last week. You know,
I'm constantly trying to reach the for the top. I'm constantly hitting sleep,
the volume
like
button
I
on
am.
The other side. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you squeeze it from both sides accidentally.
Yeah. No,
especially if it's in my left hand, right. That's how I would like to grip my old phone. So it's, you kind of got to adjust the grip down lower or just redo it.
So yeah. The shutdown button on the Lumia is smack in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hold it, you're not touching anything else. You just hit the middle button there and it goes off. And that's the one thing I've really got pissed off with is the fact I'm hitting volume buttons. And this needs to be here where the SIM card slot is and swapped around. And if that was there, I mean, that would be fantastic. Then I'd be over the moon. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I put two links in the chat room.
It's a dumb little thing, but it's just muscle memory. You know, 3 weeks from now, it's not going to matter. You know, this is going to be the new norm. So I kind of got to deal with that too.
Well, taking screenshots, I've noticed, is a little more awkward too, because I, like you said, Adam, the muscle memory is different. I'm so used to holding the phone a certain way when I take a screenshot, and that sleep button on the side and pressing the home button at the same time just seems a little more awkward for me, but I'll get used to it.
And then there's bonuses, you know, when I'm two-handed typing, even in portrait mode, you know, I would say I'm 10-20% faster right off the bat just because of the, you know, sort of more space, larger keys sort of thing. So, and I do a lot of typing on my phone when that's the only device that I have. So that's been really nice.
How do you feel?
And I'm not using the third-party keyboards. I've tried a bunch of them. You know, I'm frankly, and again, this could be a muscle memory thing, but gotten so fast at the built-in keyboard that I can really get through it. And I'm starting to get really used to how to use QuickType. You know, at first that was really slow. It slowed me down, but it's actually starting to get to the point where it's picking up. And I don't know if that's some of the learning stuff, you know, because it's supposed to learn about your typing behavior and sort of the words that you type and how you type to even various people. But I'm finding that, you know, that's getting more accurate as I've been using it.
You know, even though our typewriters always have all caps and our regular keyboards have all caps, there was something about the iPhone that always annoyed me, that when you were in lowercase, it didn't show lowercase. Yeah, I'm using the SwiftKey keyboard and I really, really like it. And I think I started liking it when I started testing Android phones. There's just something about having a lowercase display, and then when you hit the shift key, you know you're in uppercase. It just suits my psychology to see that shifting between upper and lowercase keys. And I really, really like it.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't help that Apple's janky implementation of the shift key, and then they changed it on us, you know, to begin with. Is, you never know if it's on or off.
Still, I still don't get that shift key. But the one thing that really has driven me crazy with these third-party keyboards is it doesn't seem as though you get Apple's autocorrect software for free, right?
Yeah, it sucks.
You're building your own keyboard, you're building it essentially from scratch. Is that how it works? Or
I think so. And the other thing that really bugs me though too is there's no standardization of key size either. So they're just all over the place in terms of which again changes the whole muscle memory. So if you're trying to use more than one or switch back and forth, you know, I think the kind of thing where you got to find the one that works for you and stick with it, which is why I'm coming back to the built-in one, because it works for me.
This doesn't feel like an Apple implementation, because you have a lot of weird things going on the keyboard front, right? You have the fact that it's different size. You don't get the autocorrect for free, or so it seems. You would think that, especially with something like Text Expander, I saw Text Expander offered as a keyboard, and I immediately plunked down $5, and then I realized, yeah, you get Text Expander with that, but you don't get any sort of autocorrect, and so I immediately switched back.
I think they're going to have to implement that.
More important, I didn't really realize that you can't use any keyboard, correct me if I'm wrong, unless you turn on the allow extra access, however that's phrased. But
that's not entirely true. It
has full access to everything you're typing. And I've seen comments, and to be fair, a lot of these are from people who are uninformed or misinformed, but a lot of comments that say, oh, you've got to be aware because this developer is now watching everything you type. I had to switch away. I had a lot of friends who told me, oh, they're watching everything you do, and I'm worried about being stalked. And yeah, these comments are a little bit extreme and misinformed. Yeah. But I when I heard during WWDC that there would be two options, there's sort of the basic implementation of a keyboard, and then there's the extended version where you have to say, yes, it's okay to send everything I type to a developer, I thought, okay, there are only going to be a few keyboards that require that sort of thing. And as far as I've seen with the few keyboards I've downloaded, you have to enable that for every one of the keyboards, and it doesn't prompt you ever. So if you install the app and you go into your keyboard settings and you turn it on, and then you go and you switch to it within the OS itself, and you haven't turned on that allow extended access thing, you're just going to get a blank screen. You're not going to get your keyboard. And so there's not even a prompt. It just doesn't seem like an iOS style.
Michael, I'm using SwiftKey without extended access, and I've sent email and I've done browsing. I don't have any problem.
Maybe it's just the keyboards I've used. But so that's why doesn't go that. There are some keyboards that don't require the extended access. Which ones were you using with that?
I'm using the SwiftKey, but the SwiftKey only uploads to the servers if you turn on the iCloud access where you have additional services. So it can parse your text. But if you don't turn that on, SwiftKey works fine for everything you want to do, you know, interacting with your computer, like mail and messages.
Gotcha.
Sorry, Ewan, I thought I heard Ewan saying something.
No, I've got Swipe, and I've used Swipe, and it doesn't. And it does give me, and I'm sure it gives me autocorrect. I'll have to have a go with it before we finish the show, but there we go.
Well, if you want a keyboard that does amazing autocorrect and doesn't require that you turn on full access, Flesky does that.
Right, okay. I'll give that a go.
It doesn't do the swipe thing, though. So if you prefer the swiping, you know, sort of interaction, Flesky's more like the built-in keyboard. But it has some gestures for like adding periods and spaces and backspace and stuff like that. So you can kind of keep your hands on the keyboard. And it was really designed. A lot of people who are visually impaired really like Flesky because it's autocorrect. It's just amazing.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I don't like the swiping stuff. And I think, and maybe people will call me a fool, but I think that having the swipe thing on a larger phone is less convenient because you have to move your across more space in that continuous motion, but maybe I'm just not used to it. That's certainly possible.
Is that the new iBar case, Ewan?
Yeah, that's the new iBar case. The iBeam.
iBeam. To protect from bending.
To protect against Bendgate. Yeah, Apple's allegedly had problems with these with iPhone 6s and 6 Pluses bending. Kyle tells
Apple
me that...
Apple has had problems? I don't think Apple's had problems.
Well, hang on, because Kyle, fill us in, because you were up on the...
From what I've heard, I guess this is what they've done is they've talked to Apple tech support, and essentially what they said that if you've had a problem with your phone, if it's bent and you didn't do it on purpose, in other words, I guess they're going to have a sort of test when you bring it to the Genius Bar. You bring it there, they can say that you didn't do it maliciously or anything as such, they will replace your iPhone on the spot.
Yeah, but that doesn't solve the long-term problem, right?
No,
if there is
of course
a problem.
No.
And I'm not convinced it is a huge problem
That's what the iBeam's for. That's what that's for.
You know what I mean? I think this is materials science. It's the same thing I talked about, and I don't remember I talked about it on here with the drop tests we see every time, you know, where like the glass hits concrete and it breaks. And we're supposed to have better and better glass. We've got, you know, Ion X glass now. We had Gorilla Glass 3 last time. It was 2 before. And every time I see the drop tests, it seems like it's the same thing. The screen hits concrete at the right angle, at the right, you know, piece of concrete, and it cracks. Well, guess what? It's glass. Glass cracks.
Yeah, but one thing I can say is that mine's fallen off a dwarf in San Francisco, and it's fine.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it's luck, a lot of it's angle, a lot of it, you know, it's physics. I keep saying, you know, it's like there's, you can't deny certain laws of nature. And I think, you know, you've got a large, giant, long piece of aluminum, you know, you put enough pressure in the right places, it is going to bend. So if you have tight jeans and short pockets and you sit down, guess what? Or you put it in your back pocket and you are of a certain size and weight and you sit on it at the right point, yeah, it's probably going to flex. Yeah. And
so what you're saying is
aluminum bends.
Come on, Adam. Come on, Adam. Just don't candy coat it. Just say, if you're fat, don't sit on your phone.
No, if you're fat, you got bigger pockets, so you don't get it that bend. It's all the skinny buggers. Yeah. So the other thing that Adam's saying
there
as well.
In the front pocket, but I have a feeling if I sat on my phone, you know, I've got some weight to me. I'd probably bend it.
I've seen you, dude. You haven't got enough weight to you. Wait till next year after Macworld and we've drunk a bit more
Guinness. Well, and they made it thinner. Let's add that too, right? It's not just it's a piece of aluminum. It's a thin.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I wonder if sapphire would have helped or hurt. I've heard that sapphire is a bit on the brittle side, even though it has a great surface hardness. Yeah. Thin sheets of sapphire. I wonder. I saw a demo of a fellow who presumably had a piece of thin sapphire in his hand, and he was poking it with a sharp knife, and it wouldn't scratch, and he actually bent it a little bit. Of course, there's the LCD elements underneath, too. And if you bend those, they get out of registration.
Right.
But maybe that's I wonder if sapphire would have provided more rigidity.
I think that video turned out to not really be sapphire, though, John, if it's the one that I'm thinking of. We're referring to. Yeah.
Oh, what was that?
It wasn't a hoax. They just were misinformed. They thought they had sapphire, and they really didn't.
No.
I think that was the one that showed up on, was it Cultimac or one of those? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Never mind. And the last thing is bash security flaw. Allegedly, this exposes OS 10, but Adam, you were saying Red Hat's uncovered this new exploit bash.
Right. Yeah, I've been digging in. It's a pretty serious issue. So for people who know, in your shell, you can set what's called environment variables. And this exploit, I guess, has been around for forever. And basically, it'll allow you to run shell commands inside your setup environment new variables in a way where you can actually run shell commands. But it does require accessing something that is going to set that bash environment variable. So you have to sort of have something connected to your network or have something that's talking, you know, that has bash in it. And I guess one of the attack vectors potentially could be say a home device with malicious code, or worse, like say a DHCP server that's been compromised, because when you first connect, it can run these commands to set these environment variables. So, you know, that would be concerning to me, because say your ISP got compromised and their DHCP server was manipulated in a way to start sending out these commands to your machine when you connect. So there could be that sort of cascade effect. But the point is you have to have something that is you're connecting to in some way via bash, which is the shell in the operating system, that is getting this command from some compromised server, be it a web server, a home appliance that has, you know, a bash server running, you know, something, not, I shouldn't say bash server, but having, you know, a server that can, that's going to execute these bash commands to set environment variables on your local environment. So potentially OS 10 is vulnerable because that is the shell in OS 10. And, you know, when you're accessing DHCP server, it can run these things. It sounds like at a kind of a root level. I'm still digging in on all this, and I need to talk to some people who are smarter than me about it. But It sounds like, you know, it should be something that's relatively easy to patch. So hopefully Apple rolls out a patch pretty quick and we don't have to worry about it too much. I think the bigger problem is all these Internet of Things devices. And I'm, you know, looking specifically in my house at my Nest smoke detectors and Nest thermostat. I don't know if Nest is vulnerable or not. We'll have to find out. But a lot of these have embedded bash system shells in them. You know, they're written with embedded Linux and they have bash running in them. And that sort of stuff's going to be a lot harder to patch than, say, your server or your operating system.
Okay.
Is it just me, or does everybody feel a little bit more scared now after Adam told us that? I'm a little scared.
You were making notes.
I don't think we have to worry. I think your average person's not going to have to worry too much. I would worry more about, you know, web servers and things like that are out connecting to different things that could be executing these commands, and then those getting compromised, and sort of you get this cascade effects, which is why I think, you know, the IT community and the security community is making a really big deal about this, because it potentially could be a huge deal for them. You and me, I think OS 10 is going to get patched pretty quick, and you know, once you're patched up, then you, even if you hit a server that was sending out these commands to set these environment variables, and even if they got set, they wouldn't be able to be exploited because it just wouldn't run the commands.
Okay, so there's caution, there's a bit of wait and see, and things will probably be okay in the end.
Yeah, and we're all doomed. Somebody's clicking or doing something.
I forgot the "we're all doomed" part, Ewan. We're all doomed.
We're all doomed. Is there really bad audio? Is it just me?
Yeah, no, the audio's gone really bad.
I've lost bloody audio connection here, so. Are we all there?
Yep.
Yeah, no, there's like a ticker, 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 ticker.
Huh.
I don't know what that is. Could someone, Michael, could you just mute yourself a sec?
Sure.
It's not you. Kyle? No, it's not Kyle. Must be me then. Oh well.
Yeah, it's happening.
I've got to go and let my son in. Hang on.
You have an incoming call from John Martellaro.
I love that Skype theme song. It's really catchy.
I've no idea what's happened to the audio, but it's all come since I turned Michael up. So I don't know.
It's like, you want me to hang up and call back? Or
no, apparently no one else says that they're getting it. I don't know. It must be something to do with the board. The board's crapping out, maybe. That'll be the day. Lovely. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by the Network Union. They're fantastic people. If you've got MPLS, WAN, SIP, that kind of stuff, then they will be able to help you. If you're a decision maker in an organisation that uses a WAN, then give them a call. Go straight to britishnetwork.com/sponsors and put the details in, and they'll get back in contact with you. If you're not, and you're just a consultant who's working in an organisation, then if you can pass the Network Union's name forward to the decision maker, that'd be really great, because they can then get in touch perhaps and put it through. But if you do that, just send a quick note to the Network Union and let them know that you've done that, and that they're putting you forwards. And John's gone again. But thanks very much to them for their sponsorship. They're not the people that helped John Montalaro with his internet service, however. Clearly, otherwise it would still be up. And at UK2, there's a whole pile of domains that are out there that you can buy now at the moment. Go in and check out what they've got. They've been long-term supporters of our podcast and network. They give us unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage, and we couldn't do these shows at all without them. So please go and check them out. And there's loads of offer codes there as well. You get 20% off your domains. There's deals on VPS, VPN, co-location services, and loads of stuff. So check them out too, please. Brilliant. The next thing is the Northern Bash. It's on the 6th of December. If you would like to come to the Bash, it's £5. Tickets will go on sale on Monday.
You have an incoming call from John Martellaro.
Don't worry, I can edit. but I won't. You can buy your ticket from Monday on the Bash page, and he's gone again. the Northern Bash is going to be dead simple. We're going to meet at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we are going to play video games, do the gamer show quiz, have a drink. It's bring your own booze, and then we're going to order out for a curry that we're going to split between all of us. And then it'll finish up about midnight, and it's at Tweed Bank Hall in the Scottish Borders. It should be a ton of fun. I'm going to try and bring my old Binatone gaming system up, which was manufactured, I think I had it in 1977, 78, something like that. So it's the old ping pong thing, that kind of stuff. But that'll be there, and there'll be Mario, there'll be a SNES there, there'll be a Mega Drive, Sega Mega Drive there as well to play on, plus a whole load of current games too. It'll be loads and loads of fun, so get your ticket Monday, and we'll see you there. £5 only. Super up. Right, cool things. Adam, do you have a cool thing before our audio falls apart completely?
I do. I can barely hear you, so I don't know how okay. well this is going to work
Just
out.
Just keep talking.
But... I don't think I've picked this before, but it's the newer, I guess I should say, Glyph.
Yeah.
Which is a tripod mount and holder for your iPhone. But what's amazing about this, and I didn't know if this would work or not, is the new design, I don't know if you can see this on the video, it comes with a little Allen wrench, and then on either end, it's telescoping. So you put this in here, and you can crank it to resize it for any device, and I thought, oh, there's no way this is going to work with my iPhone 6 Plus.
And lo and behold.
Let me slide it in there. So it just uses friction, you know, and there it is. So it's a tripod mount and holder. It even comes with a little, if you want to put it on your key ring, there's a little key ring accessory. But this is from Studio Neat, and you'll have to double check me on the pricing. I don't remember the current price because I think I got it on Macworld special at Macworld this year. But, you know, depending on if you have different sized devices, you need a good little, you know, pocketable tripod holder for your device. I would say this is the one to go with because it sizes all the way up to a gigantic phone. And I was using this with my 5S as well. And it'll go down to a 5 and smaller phones. So you can just adjust as needed. The only bummer is you'll have to carry around the little Allen wrench with you, but it's, you know, really neat, and I think it's relatively inexpensive. I think I got mine for around $20, $20-$30, somewhere in that range, but again, I did get it on a special, so I don't know what the actual price is, and I didn't have time to look it up.
Excellent, good one. Kyle, what have you got for us?
I've got, it's actually a free app in the Mac App Store. It's called Clean My Drive, and what it does is it reclaims free space and gets the junk off your external hard disk drives and flash drives. It's actually just a nice, simple little tool. Recovers space that you can't seem to get back, wipes it all clean, all ready to go, quick and easy. Highly recommended. It's from the makers of MacPaw, by the way.
Oh, right. MacPaw is good software.
Yeah, sure is. And it's absolutely free. It's in the Mac App Store.
It's very
needed it this week, and I thought, yeah, that'll work.
Oh, what do they do? I've got clean my Mac.
Clean My Mac. The Clean My Mac. I think they also do PC stuff too, if I remember looking at it, funny enough. So
cool.
Yeah, Clean My Mac, yeah. But yeah, so Clean My Drive. I think it, as far as I can tell though, it only does external drives, so your external hard disk drives, flash drives, SD cards, those kind of things. But it worked a charm. It was really, really good, and you can't beat free.
Okay. Excellent, mate. Good pick. Michael, what do you have for us?
So I'm going to go with Contact by Contact Center, actually. So it's by the same guys who did the Launch Center, if you remember that. It's basically Launch Center for Contact, which is pretty cool. So you just set up a bunch of, I don't know if the camera, how well that can pick it up, but basically you have, you can either do actions, you have a grid of buttons, and you can set it up to be either actions or folders for actions. So let's say you have a few people that you regularly contact, so you set them up as folders, and when you tap on them, then you have a bunch of controls specifically for them, and you can customize that all you want. You can say where you want the messages to go to. For example, my girlfriend, oddly enough, does not have an iPhone, so if I want to send her a text message, it's a little bit of a couple extra steps when I go through.
Why are you with her?
App, because I want to make sure I'm not sending it to her iPad. And this way I can set it up just so that when I tap on her and I tap on message, it actually sends a text message. And you can do a bunch of other cool things. Like I have my iOS show group up there in the corner, so I just tap that once and I send a message to Adam and Jeff. And it comes with a couple other neat little features, such as being able to access this thing called Giphy that I didn't know about until this app, but it's a giant database of animated GIFs. So if you want to annoy your friends with GIFs, then you can use this app to send that to send GIFs to them as well. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's free.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. My cool thing is convert to WMV. Now you're going to go, hang on a second, what on earth are you doing a Windows thing on a Mac show for? If you've got customers or if you've got friends who've only got PCs and they struggle playing MP4s when you've converted out of Final Cut, I've always been using a free video software that which I've said before, free video converter, and that allows me to get to anything. But the problem is with the HD, it only gives you HD for Windows, or it gives you low res for Windows. This one, you can specify your resolution. It's £2.99, but you can output to every video format you can possibly think of, apart from Blu-ray, the BCSD one. And I was dead impressed with it. I converted a file to 720p into Windows format, and it did it pretty quickly, and the quality was excellent. Really, really impressed. So if you've got a need to get a video converter, then that's great. But most of the video converters you'll find in the Mac App Store only get you into an Apple capable platform. This thing will get you into FLV, SWF, it gets you everywhere. So well worth buying, £2.99, and the quality of it is absolutely excellent. Where can we get a hold of you, Adam?
Did we lose John? Sorry, I wasn't paying
attention. Jono's gone. We'll have to get you to do his contact details for us as well.
I gotta add a bonus to my pick. I just realized the Glyph will actually work as a little stand too. They've got on this other end, you can clip this on and it works as a little desktop stand, both in portrait and landscape. So bonus on that. I just learned that by checking out the website, because I was getting pricing. It is $30 US. But you can find me at the MacCast, MacCast.com, also MacCast on Twitter and just about every place else, and also on the iOS show with Michael Johnston and Jeff Gamet, and that's at theiOSshow.com. Hopefully I'm getting that right. Right, Michael?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
Excellent. John Montalaro is at jmontalaro on Twitter. And he's at the Mac Observer as well, if you want to read any of the writings that he does. Excellent.
Really, really great stuff. And I don't just say that because I work with John. He's written for years and does really, really nice in-depth work. So people should definitely check that out if they haven't read him before. Excellent. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, absolutely fine.
No.
Kyle.
He's currently looking for a new internet provider as we speak.
Yes. I don't know what's happened there. where are you, Carl?
You can find me 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, doing the new show here on British Tech Network. And other than that, you can find me at Kyle Swagger on Twitter, of course, just 1G, don't forget, and kyleswagger.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much for the new show. It is first thing I listen to each morning now.
Thank you.
Already.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh.
And Michael, where are you, sir?
Well, of course, you can find me on the iOS show at theiOSshow.com, and we cover everything that you would expect a show of such a name would cover. But you can also find me on Appler, the social network for apps, getapplr.com. That's getappler.com. And you can get on there and share all of your apps and see the ones that I have and Adam has, and there are a bunch of other people on there, and see what your friends have as well. So it's pretty fun.
Excellent, mate. Good one. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. I'm going to sit and spend the rest of the afternoon trying to sort out what the audio issues were during this podcast and hopefully not include them in the big show later on tonight. 8 o'clock, we'll be back for that. So if you're watching live, please come along. If not, see you next week. Thanks for listening.
I can't believe you're dumping your Windows phone. Hallelujah.
I'm not dumping it. I'm still going to take it out on site with me for the bigger shots. I'm just not going to be, it won't be the tweet shots anymore, that's all.
Great, great timing. It's heating up in here. It's 86.4.
Oh,
get to that 90 point. Starting to...
Okay.